There is a lot of interest in feeding hemp or really hemp byproducts to livestock because hemp is a very sustainable crop. It can survive with low water input, so periods of drought, harsh environmental conditions. And so just growing hemp as maybe a grazing forage or something like that could be really attractive.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing the latest insights and discussions from the feed science industry. Please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today, with great pleasure, we have Dr. Merit Drury from Texas State University. Merit, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm pretty sure our audience will be very eager to learn about your work and some technical information. So let's start. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am an associate professor here at Texas State University in the Department of Agricultural Sciences. I have a PhD in human nutrition, actually, from Louisiana State University, and master's and bachelor's in animal science with a focus on ruminant nutrition from Texas A&M.
Good, good. So I see there that you went animal science and the human nutrition and so on, but that's great. I mean, we all kind of do that, and that helps expand our expertise. So as I understand, you said ruminant nutrition and a lot of work I've seen that you have done from beef cattle. So why don't we start talking a little bit about, as I understand, you do some work with hemp as a feed for beef cattle. So tell us a little bit about that first, how you got interested, and then we could go dive in a little bit more technical.
Yeah, let's do it. I don't know how I got interested in hemp, to be honest. I think, as you mentioned, you know, my PhD was human nutrition, and we have these diverse pathways. And in the human nutrition world, I was exploring our endocannabinoid system. And so I learned a lot about that system. It's like an endogenous system where we make cannabinoid substances internally, and it interacts with the brain. And anyway, I think cannabinoids intrigued me because of my knowledge of that system, because hemp is a source of exogenous cannabinoids. When we ingest hemp, it does something very similar to our endogenous system. And I guess that's how I got interested in it from the start. And like you said, we've done a few studies on hemp for beef cattle. And we have another funded study that we're starting in just a few weeks. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, no, so pretty interesting. I mean, like how you see it. I mean, for me, this is actually rocket science. I mean, I'm a mechanical and agriculture engineer. So, you know, I could talk about the machines there, but overall, that's pretty, I know it's pretty interesting. And of course, our audience, throughout the podcast, comment if you have any questions. So let's dive in a little bit there. So tell us what we currently know about hemp. And then as that, share a little bit of what research has been done and what things can be done or you're going to be conducting in the future.
Okay, so hemp is from the same plant that marijuana is also derived. They are the same plant. The thing that differentiates them is the THC content. And THC is a cannabinoid. When we ingest it, it has psychoactive effects because the cannabinoids interact with receptors in our brain. So there is a lot of interest in feeding hemp or really hemp byproducts to livestock because hemp is a very sustainable crop. It can survive with low water input, so periods of drought, harsh environmental conditions. And so just growing hemp as maybe a grazing forage or something like that could be really attractive. But separate from that, because hemp has been decriminalized, it's no longer considered a scheduled drug as long as the THC content is low enough. We are seeing lots of hemp-derived products for human use. Here in San Marcos, Texas, I cannot turn a corner without seeing a smoke shop or a vape shop. And I don't know about you there in Manhattan, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners have experienced the same. And so those products that are for purchase there are hemp-derived. And all of this to say, the human demand for hemp products is increasing. And even for like companion animals, we have hemp derived products for, you know, pain modulation or sleep management. And what this means is that those cannabinoids are extracted from certain parts of the hemp plant, especially the flower, but the remaining plant biomass might not have a market. And so these are byproducts. And obviously, our livestock industry, especially our beef cattle, are known users of agricultural byproducts or waste, right? And yeah, so the thought is, yeah, I mean, and that's the beauty of the ruminant system. And that's such a great ode to the sustainability of our industry. But the thought is, can we feed hemp either as, you know, an intact forage or those byproducts from cannabinoid production to beef cattle?
And that's very interesting. Of course, our audience like us. Please give us the famous two thumbs up. I think there's a lot of great information here. And you're right. I mean, going back to the conversation, here in Manhattan, it is the same. Everywhere you see CBD, you know, I particularly use a moisturizing lotion that has hemp on it. And it's a smell. It might be a little bit, but it's not strong, so it's different, you know, but it's very helpful, you know, overall. And I'm involved also in the pet food industry and the companion animal, and definitely start seeing more products in that. So I think there's a great work on that. So question on that, you said the whole plant and of course also byproducts. So those byproducts, are you thinking more process, pelletize, something like, you know, ground to get to the specific particle size from the feed perspective, or how do you envision that, or how's it been done?
I think it just depends. So what really happens in the industry right now is the cannabinoids or the oil are really extracted from the pressed flower. And then what I've heard is, I think different producers do it differently, but a lot of that fibrous biomass, which we're calling a byproduct or waste of the cannabinoid industry, may be left in the field, maybe just mowed down, maybe composted. But can we graze those fields? You know, can we harvest those leaves and those stems and hemp stalks and utilize them as feed? That's the question. So I know a lot of researchers have focused on hemp as part of a pelleted ration. Mm-hmm. That's happened a lot in, I think, kind of the small ruminant world. But for our research, we are really interested in like the leaves specifically, okay, but also some of the stem. And we've just fed it just straight up as is without further processing.
Oh, very interesting. And how do you, when you think about that, how does that, I don't know if you guys have gone too in-depth yet with the research, but I'm always curious to say a couple of things. You know, first of all, what, of course, if you grow it there, you don't want to waste sustainability, and that's very important.
Of course.
But what will be like hemp substituting in a way? I know some forages, but I'm just trying to put a dollar value into it. I know it depends on many factors, but what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's going to be like a high value product. I think it will be a forage. And I think the most interesting or attractive piece will be hemp producers who just want to clear that field, or, you know, maybe they have an integrated operation and also have cattle grazing. I think that's really the application. Or people who are simply growing hemp as a forage. Like that is, you know, that is the point. And I guess what we should say is the reason we need to do this research is because other parts of the hemp plant contain cannabinoids. It's not just the flower. And mm-hmm. so we need to make sure those cannabinoids don't transfer to edible products that humans will consume. Because those cannabinoids, like we said, some can have psychoactive effects. And so we really need to treat it almost like, you know, a drug or an antibiotic and establish withdrawal periods and things like this. We believe we're doing that research to establish what is that transference and then what does that depletion look like from animal tissues of, you know, animals fed hemp.
So overall, your work has been done a little bit on that. Anything else that you have said, hey, you know, we did the testing and the feeding trials. And then, of course, can you share some of those results, how you see it in terms of animal growth and efficiency?
Yeah. So the research we have done has indicated that integrating hemp leaves into a forage-based diet for beef cattle does not negatively affect diet utilization. So they will eat it. It does not affect intake of maybe other hay or grasses. And it also doesn't mess up digestion. So that's great. But what we're really interested in is cannabinoid transference. And so we fed beef cattle hemp leaves at a very specific dose that was based on CBDA content. This is a certain cannabinoid. And we did that just to build on the other literature. But we fed them hemp leaves for 14 days. And then we looked at transference to like adipose tissue, plasma, and stuff like that. And the most intriguing thing we found is that cannabinoids were retained in the adipose or the fat tissue for at least 6 weeks after the animals were removed from hemp. So that's concerning because, again, that's, you know, that's us trying to start establishing a withdrawal period and saying these animals are not going to maybe be able to have hemp in a finishing ration and go to harvest without a pretty significant withdrawal.
So you see it more as initial stages, growing phases of the animals because of this. Oh, okay. That's very interesting. Of course, for our audience, if you learned something new today, please leave a comment. We'll make sure to get it to Dr. Merritt Drury. So going back to the conversation, I mean, for me, this is very exciting, of course, okay. Learning more about hemp and that. Has anybody commercially used it there for beef cattle that you're aware, maybe in your state or surrounding states?
So we can't feed it yet. It is not approved to be to be fed. With the caveat that like hemp seed meal can be fed to poultry at a certain level. It's, you know, they have restricted levels and things like this, but it's not approved. And that is simply because we need more research, we believe. One interesting thing, we are starting a trial in just a few weeks. It was funded by USDA and NEFA, and it's a collaboration with Texas AgriLife services and some other groups. But what we are doing is feeding a different hemp cultivar that has been bred very specifically to have no cannabinoids.
Oh, okay.
And so this is exciting because it is still Cannabis sativa L, which again is the same plant as marijuana. It's the same as the other hemp cultivars that have high cannabinoids. But it's been bred truly as like a grazing forage. But right now it's not approved as animal feed simply because it's brand new. There's no research on it. And we need to prove that there's no cannabinoid transference, which sounds so silly because it's just like if they ate any grass, any hay, we wouldn't expect cannabinoid transference. But we just need to document that and show the safety and suitability of this specific cultivar to enter our feed systems today.
Oh, wow. Okay. So a lot of work going, you know, and I know you said that you're going to start some trials and you've been doing so. So how long have you worked with hemp? And besides that, any other research that is important on hemp, at least from our industry here in the animal production that might need? You said also poultry, but something that you're looking for the future.
Yeah, we've worked with hemp for a few years. We have two published trials. We have three. Two were feeding trials looking at the effect of diet utilization and cannabinoid transference. And another was like an in vitro and in situ trial. Just first saying, is this a good forage? Is this a good feed for beef cattle? We, my lab here at Texas State also explores what we call human dimensions of animal science. So we've done some social science where we surveyed U.S. consumers and we said, how do you feel about hemp being fed to livestock? Yeah, and it was mostly very positive. They recognized hemp as a good crop, a sustainable crop. They liked the whole story of this agricultural product being used for human use, but having, you know, any waste be fed to livestock. They were not that concerned about being exposed to cannabinoids, but perhaps they didn't have the literacy to know that they should be concerned. And so that was really interesting because the U.S. consumer is, by our data, very supportive of this. So I'm not sure what's next for hemp. I would love to see it be evaluated in dairy systems because we could have those data quicker seeing the cannabinoid transference into milk.
Okay, of course.
Yeah, because cannabinoids are lipophilic, meaning they just love like fat. So we would see it in the milk fat, just like we see it in the adipose tissue. So dairy researchers out there, contact me. I would love to work with you on some of that.
Great. No, that's fantastic. That'll be a great research, and of course, and especially for our dairy. I mean, Kansas State, we do have a good dairy program, and I'll definitely be sure to mention to them too, or they might see it here. So great. No, that's a lot of great work in hemp. And of course, our audience, let us know a comment if you want to learn more about a specific topic there on this. We'll be happy to work on that. So going back to this, okay, hemp, that seems you have been working several years. The survey, which was very interesting too, of course, I think there's also good information out there and also linking to sustainability, which is also very important, like I said. But let's move to other research projects you have done in feeding beef cattle. As I understand, you also do biochar. So tell us a little bit about that, because that one I really have little knowledge, and I'm pretty sure our audience will be eager to learn more about that.
Yeah. So our lab, I would say, is chaotic. But our overarching theme is advancing the sustainability of beef production. And so what we've been doing recently with some of our collaborators here at Texas State and others is feed biochar to cattle. So what is biochar? It's not charcoal. It is agriculture or forestry biomass that has been pyrolyzed, meaning it's just been heated at a really, really hot temperature. And so imagine you're clearing your land, you've got a lot of mixed brush, it's just you heating it really, really hot. And this pyrolyzation process basically creates a product that is carbon rich and has a high surface area. Okay, so the point of biochar is it is a very effective soil amendment. It improves soil health and then improves plant growth and plant quality. To do that, though, it needs to be incorporated into soil, and ideally it's activated with like an organic substrate like urine or fecal matter. A lot of people compost it to activate it. And that sounds like a lot of work. If I'm somebody and I want to improve my pasture health. I don't want to activate it. I've got to mix it with stuff and then I've got to move it all through my pasture. That's a lot of work. I'm lazy. What am I going to do? I'm going to feed it to my grazing animals because, yeah, it passes through. We know that biochar passes through almost totally intact through the gastrointestinal tract. And so along the way, our idea is, okay, it's going to pick up rumen microbes. As our beef cattle are grazing, they're going to deposit it along with their manure in the pasture. And will that then help pasture health? And there's also some research about biochar modulating rumen dynamics such that it may reduce enteric methanogenesis, methane creation, which is that bad greenhouse gas that, you know, our industry would like to reduce.
Yeah.
So some of us, no, all of us. So can we feed biochar to cattle, have them do the work for us, spreading it, and also they get a benefit of more diet-derived energy and less methane production, mm-hmm. and maybe other shifts in the rumen? We don't know. So very early days in the biochar world. We've got two studies that we've conducted. They're not published yet, but we're happy to share data and collaborate with anybody who's interested in biochar right now.
Interesting. Very interesting. I didn't know too much about it, but just to be clear, you heat it up, but you don't burn it. I mean, correct? I mean, you just get it to a high temperature or like, you know, I'm just thinking about a little bit here in Kansas that we burn the fields in the spring just to kill everything that is there and then get the new forages come up here in the plains. But how does that relate to what you're talking about?
Yeah, okay. I was not specific enough. You heat it in limited oxygen conditions.
Ah, okay. So it's not
Like a controlled burn. It's like actually taking this material, putting it in this vessel, heating it really. For those of you who are in your lab and you do organic matter analysis, it's basically like that.
Ah, okay. That's good. That's good to know. And so I know you guys just started doing this type of research.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit of what are you planning to do and what could be the potential future based on the foreseen or predicted results that you might think you get.
Yeah. The first trial we did was this past summer, 2025. Dr. Emily Fowler, who was my postdoc at the time, she did our first trial, which she took biochar. She took biochar derived from pine, because biochar can be derived from pine, maybe bamboo, pecan shells, mixed brush. So she took one type of biochar. And we did a dose rate study because we wanted to see at increasing inclusions, what are the effects on intake, digestibility, rumen microbes. And so we're still analyzing those data, but we wanted, employing a metagenomics analysis so we can really understand what's happening to the microbes in the rumen and making sure that we aren't disturbing, you know, the animal's processes by having them distribute our biochar. So we did that. From that, we decided like a certain level of biochar inclusion in the diet was the best. And so from there, we took that percent dietary inclusion and we fed different types of biochar to cattle at that level. So we said, okay, this level works. Now, is there a difference in biochar derived from pecan shell versus bamboo? And so that is going to be presented at ASAS National or annual this summer.
Really?
So if y'all are in Wisconsin, in Madison, come see us. We'll be sharing our findings there.
Great. No, very interesting. So very interesting what you have done with hemp and biochar. But we talk a lot about hemp, but also triggers me what you said on hemp is like with biochar. If I'm a beef cow producer and you know, let's say, hey, how do you sell to a producer to use biochar as a feeding? I know you still have very initial stages of research, but like from a benefit perspective,
Okay, so there was a trial that I didn't tell you about where we fed the biochar to cattle and we took their manure and we did a like a pot study, not like hemp pot, but like pots where we grew ryegrass. And we saw that ryegrass grown with biochar amended manure. So again, the manure from cattle fed biochar, the grass that was grown in that manure in soil grew much more than grass just in soil or grass in soil plus a chemical fertilizer. So this really is a testament to improving soil health and forage yield. And what we did this past week is we took that forage and we did an in situ trial to see how well it would be degraded in the rumen. And we don't know those results yet. But what I would tell you as a producer is feeding biochar to your cattle, you really just need to do it like one season. And then the data are there to show that pasture health improves. We have more forage growth. Hopefully we have better forage quality for our grazing animals. We're still determining that.
Great. No, very interesting. It comes from a perspective. I see it as almost like a full circle, you know, because
yes,
it is completing that. And so, yeah, no, great research on that sense. And I'm pretty sure that our audience will be very happy to learn more about that.
It's time for our famous three.
Avonic Animal Nutrition is committed to ensure food security and safety while reducing the ecological footprint of animal farming. Its products and services use evidence-based solutions that seek to promote animal welfare and reduce reliance on natural resources. All this is underpinned by long-standing industry partnerships and deep customer understanding. Avonic's focus on efficiency, sustainable, healthy nutrition, and collaborations with livestock farming partners creates value for customers and consumers.
Unfortunately, we're coming here to the end of the time that we have on the podcast, on the Feed Science podcast. But before we go, you know, I know there's a lot of information out there, but if somebody wants to learn more about hemp and then also biochar, what do you, from a technical perspective, what do you recommend people to look? I mean, website or, you know, your publications, of course, are valid, or any resource out there?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I am just an equal opportunist. I don't have a technical resource that I'm just like live and die by. I would just tell our viewers, hemp especially is so present in popular press and our culture. So I would say just make sure you're reading peer-reviewed literature. Any researcher is happy to talk to any researcher, right? So reach out to me. But I don't have a technical resource that I just love, you know. Hemp also is having a few issues right now with the current, you know, administration and political things. So I know there are like hemp feed coalitions. We have one that's Texas based that's inactive right now due to what the state government is proposing to regulate hemp. So we're kind of at an uncertain position, at least in certain states. So, you know, so I guess I'm just saying some of these advocacy groups are a little quiet right now, and it's just because the political climate makes hemp especially uncertain.
Yeah, I'm certain. And I know here as a fact that Kansas, I know they had a hemp association. I don't know right now, to be honest. I saw their booth in a couple shows in the past, but okay, that's very interesting. And on that, so I know you have a number of grad students and postdocs, as you mentioned. So you work in university, and so we are a lot of our audience, both domestic and international, are young professionals or people in the grad school or undergrad, moving to grad school and so on. So from your academic perspective or just professional overall, what would be your opinion on something you would like to recommend to help these young professionals be successful? Any advice that you think would be good?
Yeah, I was lucky to be on this podcast a few years ago, and I think I said the same thing I'm going to say today, which is, yeah, I mean, it's resiliency. You know, I choose my students and those I work with based on my assessment of their grit and their resiliency. And I was a first-gen college student. I only share that because my journey was not just laid out for me and it was not easy. Some doors closed, you know. But I think I was always resilient. You know, I had a manuscript rejected just a few weeks ago and we're just turning it around and submitting it to a journal that has a better fit. And those things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're going to ask a PhD advisor to take you on and they're going to say no. And it's not about you. You know, it's just about funding, time, capacity.
Yeah.
You're going to apply for jobs and you're not going to get them. And you're going to apply for grants. And how many of us have applied for grants and not gotten those? I have a long list. and yeah. and so I guess my advice is just be resilient and trust the process, trust yourself and hang in there and just be gritty and dig deep.
Perfect. No, thank you very much. Great advice. And well, we're coming to the end and thank you very much for joining us today. This concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you, our audience, and of course, Americ, for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you can stay updated for any future podcasts and episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable for us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.